Yeah, I mean, at a young age, I was gifted athletically, talented on the basketball court, and worked really hard at being a great basketball player, and put a lot of time and energy and effort into it. And, you know, to be a McDonald's All-American, to be a 6'2 white kid and from Fall River, Massachusetts, and make the McDonald's All-American team, you know, doesn't happen often, and it was a dream come true. And, you know, being highly touted and being recruited by every school in the country, you know, I decided to go to BC at 18 years old. And 3 weeks on campus, I was introduced to cocaine. And, you know, 3 weeks on campus, I looked at one line of cocaine, and I figured I'd do it one time, try it one time. I had no idea it'd be 14 years, you know.
14 years from that point forward, and I guess the major headline of the documentary, not so much the end, but the body of it, is the fact that that was a struggle that just got worse and worse, correct?
Oh, of course. Yeah, it got worse and worse. I mean, I was expelled. I was kicked off campus 4 months later and sent back home with no scholarship and looking for a place to go. And that's when Jerry Tarkanian reached out to me and asked me if I was willing to go across country and start over at Fresno State. So he gave me that opportunity, and I moved 3,000 miles away. Unfortunately, so did my addiction.
Hmm. So you go to Fresno State, and you are still a great basketball player at this point. You're showing all your skill sets, although on the side of playing in major college basketball, you were still drinking and using a lot of drugs.
I was, that's where cocaine was tricky, you know, because I would go out on a weekend. I would do it excessively, for a couple of days, and then I would put it down for 2, 3, 4 months. But, you know, it caught up to me. I mean, I was, you know, walking into nationally televised games with no sleep, you know, doing cocaine and on the way to the game after 13 and a half hour bender. You know, it was rough. It was rough. It was a rough ride at, you know, 19, 20, 21 years old.
And eventually, it says in the documentary and your story, and you also have a memoir, where you do get help, you do go to rehab, and that didn't do much good?
Oh, yeah, no. I checked into rehab in Salt Lake City when I was 21 years old, and I thought that I was above it. You know, I listened to the stories and listened to these people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s who had families at home, and, you know, I wasn't identifying, and I figured that, you know, I was better than the illness that they were talking about, and I thought that I could work my way around it, and I paid a hard price for that. You know, I tell people I went in at 21 and it took me 11 years to get back to a treatment center.
Chris Herron's with us here on WBAL, former great college basketball player, former NBA player. And Chris, through all of that, you get drafted in the second round in the NBA. So you're in the NBA. Everything's still right there for the taking for you professionally as far as a basketball player and everything else. At this point, you do have a kid and you are married. But where did it not stop with you in the NBA? Where did it take even a further step backwards?
Well, I was introduced to a little yellow pill called OxyContin, and it was 40 milligrams, and I spent $20. And it was a painkiller right in between me going back for my second season with the Denver Nuggets. And 4 months prior to me going back to training camp, I took that one yellow pill, and that one yellow pill turned 40 milligrams, turned to 1,600 milligrams a day. I went from spending $20 to $25,000 a month. OxyContin grabbed a hold of me and wasn't letting go. So I struggled. I struggled for 2 years on OxyContin, and went overseas to play in Italy, thinking that, you know, I'll take some with me, I'll cut my milligrams down, and I'll shake this monster. But it didn't work that way. I found myself on the streets of Bologna, Italy, hustling heroin, and that's when I was introduced to heroin, playing basketball in Bologna, Italy.
At this point, you're still making great money playing overseas, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, my contract overseas was about $500,000 in cash. But to be honest with you, it didn't matter. You know, it really didn't matter how much I was making because I was spending. You know, I was talking to my wife the other day, and, you know, I look back, and it was a blessing that I got busted in college because I probably would have been a first-round pick, and I'd probably be dead because of the amount of money that I would have had at such a young age. Mm. So, yeah, it didn't matter how much money I was making. I was going to spend what I had.
I was lucky I wasn't a first-round pick all these years later. That is an amazing way to look at things. If you never started with the Oxy, would the addiction have still kept going with drinking and cocaine and who knows what else?
Yeah, I would say so because I was never, you know, I never treated it. I never addressed it. So it would have came out in other ways. It just so happened that, you know, OxyContin was the drug that, you know, catapulted this addiction into, you know, misery.
When was rock bottom for you, like an actual date, and how did you get there?
Oh, you know, every day is rock bottom. I mean, there is no good day in the world of OxyContin and heroin. So, but I went away to treatment after being found overdosed in my vehicle, and I was there for about a month and a half, and I got a phone call to come home for the birth of my third child. When I was found overdosed, my wife was 8 months pregnant. So I went home for the birth thinking I had it, you know, I could figure this out. And I was using 6 hours later. I went right back to it. After 35 days in treatment, I went right back to it. When I went to the hospital to see my wife looked at me and said, don't ever come back. You know, I'm tired of you breaking my heart. And I went back to that place, and the counselor there handed me a phone, and he said, you know, make a phone call to your wife, tell her you'll never see her again, tell her you'll disappear, and tell your wife to tell your three kids that when their father left them in the hospital this morning, their father died in a car accident. You know, he said, you're better off playing dead for these kids because these kids deserve to live. And unfortunately, at 32 years old, that made a whole lot of sense. And I had said those words to myself for many years. I just really had never heard anybody say them back. And when he said that, you know, I thought for a second, maybe that's what I should do. And I thank God I didn't. And I thank God that I went back to my room and hit my knees and I started praying. And from that day forward, by the grace of God, I've been sober.
Chris Herron is with us here on WBAL. And Chris, we're going to take a break here in a moment, but I do want to ask you, during your NBA career, during your career overseas, obviously you're using a lot. What kind of father and husband were you during those days? Were you still there? Were you still somewhat around and at least somewhat of a responsible parent?
I tried, you know. I tried my hardest. You know, like people often ask me, you know, I was a professional basketball player, you know, an hour, two hours a day. I was a junkie the rest. And in between that, I tried my best to be a dad, you know. Unfortunately, you wake up in the morning sick, and that has to come first. And you go to bed at night trying to plan the day to get the next one. So, but in between that, you know, I was around. You know, I went to my kids' games. I was a mess, you know, but I honestly, you know, at that time, I tried my best to be a good dad.
We're with Chris Herron, the centerpiece of a great ESPN 30 for 30 documentary, Unguarded. Chris also has a memoir out. We'll come back and find out how this story ends, or where it is right now, I should say, right here on WBAL.